Okay, well, we are testing our microphones. We're about to do another live broadcast of the Dr. Susan Block Show on Radio Susie 1. And we're going to have a lot of guests tonight. On the phone. Everybody's on the phone. That's the wonderful thing about radio. You can have all kinds of people in your home, and they're just on the phone. They don't leave a mess. And, you know, they don't stay later than they're invited. And if they do, you just hang up on them. That's all. So it's great to have guests, and we're going to have a few guests, some exciting guests, which we'll get into when we get started here. And how are we doing? We're almost ready to start, so...
From Los Angeles, California, from our house to your house, you're listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web. A different kind of radio. There's no jingles, there's no hype. There's just radio at its very best with Dr. Susan Block. And let me mention just one thing. When you listen to this show, you turn the lights down low.
Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, artists and exhibitionists, voyeurs and connoisseurs, Democrats and Republicans, libertarians and vegetarians, insurgents and crusaders, libertines and masturbators, all you children of sex, and we are all children of sex. We may or may not be children of God, Jesus, or Allah, or Buddha, or Brahma Ramadama, but until we start cloning ourselves, we are all children of sex. And I want to welcome you to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web, Worldwide Revolution, Worldwide Sexual Revelation, broadcasting live from Dr. Susie's Speakeasy in the soul of downtown L.A. I am the Irreverend Dr. Susan Block, your servant, your lover doctor, your pleasure preacher, darling, your daughter of the American Revelation. And it's the fourth anniversary of the bombs away birthday of America's lost war on Iraq. Lost but not over. Oh no, it's perma-war. How did we get into such a mess? What happened? Do you know? Where were you on March 19th, 2003, the first night of shock and awe, the beginning of the Bukkake bombing crusade that climaxed with the rape of Iraq? Do you remember those awful moments when the bombs began to fall, bursting like beautiful fireworks, the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, and it was kind of pretty. But we knew, yes, now it's happening. Now we're going in like Godzilla, aggressively perpetrating war. I was in France myself, of all places, in Cannes specifically, for the MIP TV festival, and, you know, I wanted to have a good time. And starting a war was not my idea of a good time. I kept thinking and hoping that Bush was bluffing about invading Iraq, as I figured Saddam had been bluffing about his WMD, I thought, and hoped that if a grand bluff was Bush's way of getting Saddam to come to the table on America's terms, he could be a brilliant strategist. I was wrong. Bush wasn't bluffing at all. He put his bombs where his mouth was, showing himself to be the consummate chicken hawk uber villain in a blood-soaked international fiasco of biblical proportions that just keeps getting deadlier and more disastrous every day. On the night of March 19th, 2003, I remember stopping in a little all-night market called Rims that was around the corner from our Cannes apartment. And there was Mohamed the clerk sitting in front of the store TV, and he was watching the American bombs falling on his fellow Arabs. anguish lining his face, horror filling my heart as I walked in. And we flashed our peace signs, trying rather pathetically to apologize to Mohamed for the bombs we both watched falling on his TV. He knew we were American, and graciously seemed to forgive us, at least enough to sell us a pack of Dunhills and some mints. And then we continued on with our evening plans, which involved going to L'Oasis, one of our favorite libertine clubs of Cannes, and we actually managed to forget all about the war and our sense of impending doom for a couple of marvelous, lust-filled, violence-free hours. But on our way back, we stopped into Rims for a bottle of water. And again, we heard the sounds of bombs coming from the store TV. But this time, Mohamed was smiling. I was perplexed. Why is he smiling? Is this like what Dick says it's going to be? We're going to be awaited with smiles? Our bombs are going to be greeted with flowers and chocolates and smiles? Could it be that he was changing his mind, Mohamed, and now seeing the American invaders as liberators? Wow. No, not quite. Mohamed had simply changed the channel and was now tuned to an old movie on Vietnam, and his fury was being placated by watching Americans on the receiving end of wartime brutality. So we all watched Americans getting blown up in the jungles of Vietnam in a movie while actual Iraqis were getting blown up in Baghdad in real life on another channel. And we paid for our Evian and left. So the Iraqi invasion really messed up my trip to Cannes, to say the least. I'm very grateful it didn't mess up what it messed up in a lot of other people's lives, in my life. But during those awful first days of the war, when so many American and even most European media outlets were gung-ho war, gung-ho war, they were cheerleaders for this war, I couldn't seem to stop bawling like a bad dream. And at the time, I wrote this in my journal. I can't watch TV or even read the news on the internet without crying. From the loudish war-stoking of Fox TV to the scenes of suffering eloquently described by Robert Fisk, all of it just makes the tears stream like spring rain. I cry for the Iraqis losing their lives, their limbs, their loved ones, tender bodies pitted with fragments from this new kind of war. I cry for our troops so young and strong and sexy, being shot at and killed and forced to kill civilians, so blood that will never leave their hands or their mind. I cry for the families of the soldiers, helplessly and patriotically, steeling themselves for news of their loved one's death or injury. Or perhaps they will come home in one piece physically, but mentally broken or hardened into gunmetal. I even cry for the TV news hacks, the press whores embedded with their soldier daddies, so excited about the romance of reporting a war. Yippee, trying so hard to play their part in the game, their tongues tied with the intricacies of invasion, their eyes stinging with sand and the sights of slaughter they dare not describe for security reasons, their souls scorched by the carnage. I cry for the blown-up buildings and for the archaeology of this ancient land of Mesopotamia, Ur, the birthplace of Sarah and Abraham, biblical mother and father of the three great monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Remember the outrage we felt when the Taliban blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas months before 9/11? What have we done to Iraq? It is the same crime against archaeology. And I cry for myself, now branded an ugly American. Throughout the world, I have always loved to travel. I was crying a lot, but all that crying just chapped my cheeks, so we decided to do a little art therapy and produced a great
erotic art show called Art Bombs, American Libertines for Peace, at our favorite little restaurant in Cannes, El Teatro, one of our favorite restaurants. Just trying to do our part to show the French and that some of us Americans were at least trying to say no to Bush's war, even if he wasn't listening. And it was a great opening and a beautiful show, but the bombs continued. And, of course, the looting and the storming and the torture were yet to come. And the Civil War. And I remember the Sunday after. Shock and awe. There was the boy king on TV assuring reporters that the Iraqis were, quote, surrendering gleefully. He was still a bit bleary-eyed from his top-of-the-war party weekend at Camp David, so he wasn't quite up to speed on the fact that at least some of the Hajis were fighting back. They weren't exactly gleeful to receive his bombs, despite their being gift-wrapped in talk of liberation. And 4 years later, still not gleeful. A lot more of them are fighting back, or with each other, or both, and a great many more of them are dead. More Americans are also dead, and many more are maimed physically and mentally and being treated to the worst of hospital treatments. We know. Our gas prices, not exactly falling. Our freedoms, definitely shrinking. Iraq is a raging, bloody, infrastructure-deprived, hyper-religious, torture-infested, civil war imploding mess. The only folks who really seem to be benefiting from this war are, of course, the chicken hawk pussy named Bush and the dickless dickhead named Dick. And their cronies at Halliburton, Bechtel, Lockheed, the Carlyle Group, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. And 4 years later, Bush is still bleary-eyed. Today he had a powwow with a college football team. That was an important thing to do on the anniversary of his war. Well, you know, his personal experience of getting bombed has always come not on the end of a cruise missile, but from a bottle of Jack. Actually, that's not such a bad idea. Not such a bad kind of bomb to get at this moment. Pass me the agavero. Ah. 3 years later, the bleary-eyed Bush ignores the reporters who ask him to make comments about this fourth birthday of his Frankensteinian baby. No doubt about it, though. On this fourth happy birthday of W's disaster in Iraq, it's clearer than a day without bombs. We need to get out of there. We need to be at peace. And that's just my opinion, of course. And I'm sure there's lots of other opinions about what we should do with this disaster. I mean, war. I guess it's a war. Invasion, occupation. And I would like to hear from you about your opinions. My telephone number is 213-749-1330 if you're in Los Angeles or outside North America. And if you're inside North America, you can call us toll-free at 1-866-289-7068. Happy fourth birthday. Not very happy, in my opinion, but I'm wondering about yours. Are you still cheering the war on? What's going on with you?
Those, you know, were heady days. The
a lot of people
generals,
were cheering the war on at that time.
The generals were masturbating a lot and
yes.
talking to the media about shock and awe.
Oh, they were very excited.
The advanced technologies of war.
It was a Bukkake bombing crusade.
And then.
And then the rape of Iraq.
They said.
And then the
Let's
disaster.
Let's go. And then we had shock and awe.
Mm.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe.
And now we have a disaster. And I'm going to try and get our first guest on,
okay.
So I'll be right with you.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I thought we had our first guest. Okay. Well, we are talking about the war in Iraq tonight, and we talk about it at other times, but we usually mix it in with talking about a lot of sex, which we're probably going to end up doing tonight. We are, you know, irrepressible when it comes to talking about sex, but we are talking about the war in Iraq because it is the fourth anniversary of the invasion. I'm not even sure that calling it a war is really quite accurate. I think it's more of an invasion. They kind of rolled over. They didn't fight back much, you know. Actually, I think that that crazy minister of information who kept saying the Iraqis had a secret weapon, he was right. Their secret weapon was that they were never going to surrender. They were not going to fight for Saddam Hussein, but they were not going to surrender to invaders, to the Anglo-American invasion of their country. It is their country, you know, and they haven't surrendered, and they're fighting amongst themselves, yes, and I think there's a lot of pointing fingers, blaming the victim by saying, oh, well, they're fighting amongst themselves, the Shiites and the Sunnis. They can't get along. It's like they're children who can't play. But why are they fighting? Because we invaded their country.
Doctor, I have Michael on the line for you.
Which Michael?
Michael Massey.
Michael Massey. Okay. Hello there, Michael Massey.
Well, hello, Maisley. Hi, how are you doing?
Maisley. Maisley. Okay.
Maisley. There's an
Maisley. Okay,
Maisley.
I said.
Yeah, or just Artist General.
Artist General is your title. And Artist General is kind of like Surgeon General or
exactly.
Attorney General. Explain
right.
What an Artist General does.
Yeah, if you Google Artist General, I have a right-wing acquaintance on the East Coast that thinks that Google, being a bunch of lefties, said put me at the very top of about 80 million. But they didn't do that. It just fell into place. But the right-wing paranoia, the Artist General is at the at the top, you know, so that might be an entertaining.
And hello?
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I thought you faded out for a second there. So, so Artist General Michael Maisley, you've been a voice that's, you know, been against the war for a long time, since the beginning. You were certainly not one of the cheerleaders who has now decided that the winds are blowing the other way. So how did you feel? What were you doing when the bombs dropped 4 years ago?
I was actually at Harbin Hot Springs, which is probably one of the better places to be into the national
Trump. Nice hedonistic place.
Cold rain, you know, like an omen or something, a real hard driving cold rain, and the news was out, and Bush was pumping his fist, remember, about how does it feel? He said, feels good.
Feels good.
I mean, how sick does it get? This is the most chicken hawk war in U.S. history, and you got to think about what that means. You know, this ruling elite, you know, overprivileged, overindulged criminal cadre have taken us into a preemptive war. And with Greg Pelos had a great piece, by the way, I think yesterday or today, and his contention is that it's mission accomplished, that the idea was not to take Iraqi oil, it was to keep it off the market.
Ah, yeah, I wonder
and
about that, too.
$10 billion in just one, what, Exxon profits in that reflected that strategy in that quarter, what, the biggest corporate profit in history.
They have had quite, you know, a good day with this. They've been making a lot of money, and maybe that's true. It was to take
well,
the Iraqi oil off the market and just destabilize the Middle East.
That. Yeah, mission accomplished. Then how about this? You look at, here we go, you take 41 and 43, those combined presidencies, and I'll bet more than any other administration in history, they are more connected to war profits, because Poppy is probably nearly a billionaire or more through the Carlyle Group.
Uh-huh.
There you got Junior taking us into preemptive war, and then trying to kill the estate tax. Now, why, I've never seen a figure, but my estimate would be he's in line for tens of millions if he kills the estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a kind of conflict of interest, or shouldn't that at least be on the table? And then it's blood money.
Yeah.
Tie it into the war, and, you know, then the real sickness is in your face.
Yeah, so you're in, I mean, some people say that Bush is just a complete idiot, and he's blundered his way through this. You're kind of thinking this is all really even more diabolical than we know.
Well, you know, a Palace piece was a real eye-opener for me, because I had, you know, I never realized that. He pointed out oil was at, what, I think $18 a barrel, and it went to 57. And then
wow.
There's an attribution there. If you subtract the normal flow of Iraqi oil, that's pretty much in the equation. So in their view, yeah, yeah, the war's a fiasco and a failure, but they don't care about the middle class and working class cannon fodder. Remember, Cheney said, when even Bush was alarmed at the tax cuts, you know, he said, shouldn't we give something to the middle? And Cheney was quoted in Woodrow's book as saying, it's our due.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that sense of entitlement. These guys don't think they're ripping the public off. They don't think they're war profiteers. They think that they have sacrificed financially to be public servants. And so if any payback comes their way, more power to them. That's their attitude. There's no moral self-examination whatsoever. So the idea that they're losing sleep at night, that's probably not happening at all, you know. I mean,
how about this movement to send the Bush twins to Iraq? I mean,
I love that. You know, this is in our face as a ruling elite, and this is these guys. They started a class war as well as a war in Iraq. I mean, they went from a cold war class wise into a hot war. It's you know, you look at what he's doing to the middle class and the working people of America and. You know, you can see. Look at Barbara Bush's revealing remark in the hurricane. You know, that the
and Katrina.
These people are underprivileged anyway, so they're doing pretty well.
Living in a stadium.
You know, this is a demonic administration, and if you want to go to the New Testament, you can find it about the very elect being deceived by the Antichrist. You know, I'm not an Orthodox Christian, but I almost wish I was because I would buy into that whole thing. You know, they. Know them by their fruits. That's what the Bible says, you right-wing, red state nitwit.
Well, maybe some of his supporters are really supporting him because they think he is the Antichrist, and that way we'll get this apocalypse.
Well, hey, look, money is the root of all evil. That's what with these right-wing Christian zealots, you know, that's if money is the root of all, they say love of money. What administration has more loved money than this one, you know? Know them by their fruits because talk is cheap and... You know, really, I run into Jesus freaks a fair amount of the. You know, I'm a street musician, so I.
Right. Hammer dulcimer, one of my favorite instruments.
Yeah, right.
Beautiful instrument.
I've always loved it. I bonded with that instrument. I mean, if anybody wants to check it out, artistgeneral.com.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's stunning what's going on. And Bush, this whole administration should have been politically dead in the water 10 scandals ago. You know, it's really amazing that they. They pulled it. They must be amazed.
So what about the Democrats in your artist's general opinion?
Democrats obviously need an emergency backbone transplant. But on the other hand, you know, it's not a level playing field. You look at the Democrats, when they score a touchdown politically, it gets played as a first down.
So now let's
just the opposite.
So you're kind of pointing the finger now at the fourth estate.
Well, exactly. Because, okay, here's – imagine – a President Gore sitting there reading My Pet Goat. As Bill Maher pointed out, that was the most impeachable stretch of the Bush presidency in this nuclear age, nuclear missile age. Here's the Commander-in-Chief.
It really is amazing.
Offline because we witnessed Andrew Card give Bush the news. We saw that happen.
Yeah.
We saw Card walk away. So we knew there's no electronic stuff going on. The Commander-in-Chief got the news. America's under attack. Card stepped away. Bush remained seated.
Yep, kept
now,
reading.
That speaks volumes, and Bill Maher's point was well taken, that in this age of nuclear missiles, in the Cold War, Bush would have been impeached. Now, you can't imagine Al Gore politically surviving doing that, can you? I mean, who can? If Al Gore was president and he sat down...
I can't even imagine how Bush survived it. I mean...
I know, and he not only survived it, he got a chance to push a bullhorn into his face and act like a hero a couple days later.
Yeah.
You know... I mean,
when the coast was clear.
He not only got a pass on that, he got a chance to be celebrated. I mean, he was at 88 points in the poll. You know, I mean, talk about a disgraceful, you know, I mean, it just seemed like everybody should have seen through that. I think you and I and a lot of your listeners, of course, did. But the rest of America rushed behind him. And now, finally, you know, who but morons and the greediest of the elite are on his side now? You know, I mean, this is treason. The history is going to record this. Posterity is going to tar and feather these bozos.
Yeah.
By definition, you know.
You know, we have a neighbor here, and Jenna Bush rents a house from him.
Yeah.
And his dad.
We have very high end neighbors.
And
here in our warehouse.
Secret service runner.
All right, and his dad has breakfast with the old
poppy.
Old poppy bush.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I've spoken to him, and they're in the oil business. And he said, you know, these people are really nice people and so forth. But then he said, you know, of course, there's trillions and trillions of dollars worth of oil left in that area of the world. And they'll kill anybody who touches it or comes near it.
Well, you know, that's
it, what it comes down to.
And it's easy oil. It's not like the oil in Alaska and
not only
Russia
that,
and Canada.
Not only that, this man and this administration has used the armed forces of the United States
for their own private
army.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, I
and that's criminal.
A question out that the San Francisco Bay Guardian, I met with Steve Jones, the city editor, a couple years
ago. I used to write for the San Francisco Bay Guardian.
Oh, did you? They're one of the respectable...
Bruce Brugman was the publisher then.
What's that?
Bruce Brugman was the publisher.
He still is, isn't he?
Is he still the publisher?
Still,
all right,
yeah.
I hope
still,
so.
Yeah.
He's an old, gritty newsman.
Yeah, the others are bought out, are corporate-owned. But anyway, I met with him for lunch, and he did a piece just before the presidential debates with Kerry. And I've been trying to get this very simple question out. I call it just a recusal for life, that if you're in a war cabinet serving on a federal payroll, if you have exercised fatal authority in our name, you know, that you're like all the war cabinet of Bush, then you should be asked... in public, would you be willing to recuse yourself from any profit traceable to any war in your watch and surrender it on demand to veterans benefit groups, college funds for children of the fallen?
You know, sounds reasonable.
A totally basic, fundamental moral proposition that they can say no to. But, of course, they can't. You know, it's not politically viable. But remember how nervous Bush got in the debates when the presidential portfolio subject came up. When it was his nervous remark was, anybody want some wood? And it was about a timber interest, which turned out to be minor. But it was brought up as a potential conflict of interest. Well, how much more, that's what Bush was afraid of probably, that what if it went to Poppy's war investments?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what if he was asked that simple question, Mr. President, he was president. Mr. President, would you be willing to surrender on demand any profit from any war or bloodshed on your watch? For the rest of your life, if it's discovered, the blogosphere discovers it, would you agree to that, yes or no? I mean, what are they going to say? What would he say? Like, well, that's a daunting question if it wasn't a chicken hawk war. But, you know, what would he say? Well, you know what? I would want to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Or Cheney, what would he say? Wolf Blitzer had Cheney in the palm of his hand, and he peed all over himself, you know, when the question of his daughters. You know, Cheney said that question is out of line. Remember that?
Yeah,
weeks ago? What if Wolf Blitzer said, Mr. Vice President, what do you think of this concept? That anybody serving in a war cabinet should forego any profits traceable for the rest of their life to any war on their watch. What do you think of that? Share your thoughts on that, would you, sir? What the hell would Cheney say? You know, would he say that question is out of line? How about the Move On ad then? We show the hesitation in these Chicken Hawk war cabinet responses trying to evade any sacrifice. You know, I mean, think about it. 10 years from now, there could be some slice of their complex, robust portfolio that's connected to... You know, Iraqi oil fields, whatever. Hey, there's 1.2 million here that we could connect to the war. Some veterans benefit blog discovers that. Give it up. You said you would. Well, that's what, you know, can you imagine how little inclined they're going to be to commit to that? What a can of worms.
So a critical proponent of this war and very much to blame is the media. Because how are we letting these guys get away with it? How are we letting the Bush cronies all get away with this? We are letting them get away with it.
Right. And if you imagine, go back to the Gore thing, the thought experiment of Gore reading My Pet Goat. Gore would be political roadkill. He might as well do what Johnson did if that was Gore and say, I will not accept or seek the nomination. I mean, even 2 years out from the re-election, Bush got a complete pass and Gore would have been crucified. You know that. You know, come on, the media would give Al Gore a pass on sitting on his fanny reading My Pet Goat in the nuclear missile age.
I can't imagine him doing that, though.
Seven minutes.
I can't imagine Al Gore doing that. He might not accomplish anything, but he would do something.
But I'm just saying that imagine that if he did, the press would be, they would rip him to pieces. And Bush was, they were like Bush. They were that deer in the head. I think the look on Bush's face was one of absolute fear, and I do believe...
They're all like fraternity brothers and sisters of Bush.
Well, I believe there's complicity in 9/11. I mean, I'm not full-on conspiracy theory, you know, but I do believe that there was... That the look on Bush's face was, oh, my God, it's real now. It's happened.
And
I believe Andrew Card might have said an extra thing, because all we got is Andrew Card's word reporting to the world what he said to the commander-in-chief, right?
We don't know what he really said.
He said that... America is under attack. He might also have said, sit here, sit tight.
Oh, I'm sure he did. You
know, actually, what he said is, let's get these fuckers. And let's get their fucking oil.
Yeah,
and let's do it now.
Keep reading my pet goat.
Yeah. Let's fuck them out.
It's happening.
It's happening now.
Sit
tight. Watch the television.
Yeah.
Look
at
it.
Well, this article is, like, it's a surprisingly sensible assessment, you know, like mission accomplished. Yeah, not to get Iraqi oil, to keep it off the market. You know, that makes as much sense in the short term. Yeah, of course, eventually they want to get it, but you know, the idea of having it pretty much offline so serves their interest. $18 to $57 a barrel.
So, what's our hope that this is going to be something that
I
we can get?
I think the immune system, the Fourth Estate, is starting to get emboldened. I think Karl Rove has been emasculated. He's going to go down. Gonzalez is going down. I think that what we're going to see here is a pile-on, and it's going to be like finally the body politic is roused to fight this dire infection, and it's a fight to the death, but I think, you know, we'll survive. These guys are going to be outed as traitors.
All right. Do you have any preferences in terms of candidates for president?
You know, I don't want a Republican. I would take Hillary Clinton over Republican, hands down, but I'm not about her. I think it's a shame in a way because she's got an extra burden as a woman to be tough, you know. And it's, but at the same time, you know, I wanted a lot more from her in terms of just standing up for stuff. Bill Moyers, I would love to see him.
Yeah, the Bill Moyers is pretty good.
I'm looking forward to Senator Al Franken. Boy, does that sound good.
Well, actually, the Republicans now are thinking of running an actor. What's his name from?
Schwarzenegger.
Law and Order.
Thompson,
I think his name is.
But I really think as a European, because I am European, is that most Americans have been bought off by their cars and television sets. And that's why we're not out in the streets, because, let me tell you, it would end real quick when we're out in the street, millions of us.
Yeah. Remember, at the launch of the war, there was 10 million worldwide, and that was touted, in the Times as the second superpower, you know, collective superpower. Which
was.
But.
Yeah.
It was, and we went in there and bombs away anyway, so.
Yeah, right. Well, I want to recuse the question. I want to see Cheney and Connie. You know, I want to see that because I think it would be, it's a Trojan horse question, and there's no getting out of it. What, you know, even if they knew it was coming, they would, what are they going to do? I hope they would talk to their lawyers, because their lawyers would say, you don't want to commit to that.
Mr. General, for $300 a week in this country, they'll buy you off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are cheap in this country.
People are cheap in this country. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, no, it's spring. Come on.
Well, I do hope you're right and that the people will rise up or the media will wise up something.
I think there's a sense of, look, posterity's taking names. And there's heroes and there's villains. And by the way, even for the NSA people and that are listening in on this and, you know, all the radical left-wingy stuff, there's somebody kind of watching it probably. I want, as Artist General, let me issue you a warning that our people are taking over. And we're going to get subpoenas, and we're going to find you out. So a lot of you guys, remember the people in the CIA and the NSA, some of them quit in protest.
Hey, and by the way.
Those are the principled ones.
And
the ones that stayed, you know, we need that, but we don't need the abuses. And right now there's people abusing that, and they think they're covered because Bush is on their side. But Bush is going down. So, you know, we're going to watch you leap from the ship right into our net, you know, and the net is called posterity, and you're going to be vilified for treason of one sort or another. You know, I mean, I think it's coming down to that. People who, you know, are against.
But how long will it take to get there? Will it be, you know, 20 years, or will it be
this year? Obviously for the Internet, because, I mean, that's where I get most of my stuff. I mean, BuzzFlash, for example, is one of my favorite websites. They're one of them.
Well, of course, you and I met on the Internet.
Exactly. Right,
through Counterpunch.
That's another great website.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done some great stuff on there, too.
Well, thank you, Michael, and thank you for the great stuff you've done. As I said, in the very beginning when the bombs were dropping and you send out your newsletters, your Artist General newsletters, they were very inspiring at that time when there was hardly anybody else that was really speaking truth.
Well, thank you. We're definitely in the culture posse trying to save things.
And by the way, I don't want to send the twins over there. I don't want to send anybody's kids over there.
Yeah.
They look great in lingerie. They're doing drugs. Yeah, everything's cool.
We don't really want to send them over.
Right, yeah. That's fair.
But I like to threaten him with that.
That's right, see if he gets a rise out of it.
No, actually, we should send him as the commander-in-chief, like the kings used to do.
He should be
to lead his fucking armies.
In a tank in the head.
Oh, I like that.
Now, that's responsibility.
Well, the most chicken hawk war in our history, you know, when you think about that, it makes it, it's a whole new layer of offensiveness. You know, it really is. These guys, their exposure to war is Hollywood, which they vilify anyway. But, I mean, you know, you look at Bill Kristol and, you know, these neocons. I mean, I call it the peanut gallery, you know. These guys are, the fact that they still have any credence whatsoever is stupefying.
Well, they're losing it. And we've been very grateful to have you with us,
yeah,
Michael.
Thank you so much.
Maisley, Artist General.
And next up is Frank Moore from Berkeley.
And actually, I was just going to say, I wasn't sure if he was going to be on next, but he is a presidential candidate. And you might want to continue listening because you might want to throw your support to a fellow artist who throwing his hat into the ring. Okay, Michael, take
Thank
care.
Thank you so much.
Peace through pleasure.
Okay.
Stay in those hot springs.
Linda and Frank.
Hello, Linda and Frank. Frank Moore is on the line with Linda.
Yes.
So, how are you doing on the fourth anniversary of the Iraq War?
Okay, you're going to hear me spelling out Frank from his G. Great. We're doing great.
You're doing great. And, I mean, it's a time of kind of mourning, isn't it? For a terrible war that's been one disaster after another.
I will change that.
Wow. Good for you. And I know you're going to be running for president, so are you going to just pull all of our troops out of Iraq as soon as you win?
Yes. That we should not have G gone in. We shouldn't have gone in the first place. It is like S.T.A. saying in a marriage that you should not have had done in the first place. It's the same as saying in a marriage that you shouldn't have been in the first place.
It's like a marriage that you shouldn't have been in the first place. That's why America needs a divorce from an abusive husband named Bush.
Yes.
And he's been violent and abusive, and we need a divorce, and we need it now.
So I will pull the troops. So Frank said he will pull the troops out.
Good. They need to be pulled out. That's right. I mean, sometimes when, you know, you're in sex, you need to pull out. And sometimes when you're in somebody else's country, you also need to pull out. And that's what we need to do. That's our way of supporting the troops. Pull them out.
And anyway, George Bush went on the aircraft carrier and he said, mission accomplished. We won.
Yeah, right.
So we can get out of there now.
Well,
I will C-H-A-N. I will change.
Wow.
I will change our our role.
In the world?
Yes.
Well, we need to do that. We can't keep this up. This big bully of the neighborhood roll.
S-U-P, super, power, 2-A-M-E-M, member of the G...
Global Village?
L, Global Village.
Yes. Yes, we need to be that, because if we're the only superpower, it's just a question of a little bit of time before we're knocked off our perch. That's the nature of humanity. Any big bully that's bullying everybody else is going to get punched bad.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's bound to happen. And right now, it's just it's just a big mess. I mean, the guest that we had on earlier said maybe he did mean mission accomplished, because really what he wanted was a big mess. To keep the oil from getting out of Iraq, to keep the oil prices high, and to keep Iraq in a state of disaster, and get rid of some of our working class kids, that too.
Or do what his dad did not do.
Well, yeah, he tried to do what his dad did not do. Well, he killed Saddam. That's the one thing he did. He did a snuff film. That's the big accomplishment here. Well, anyway, I want to explain to our listeners who are not yet familiar with Frank Moore that Frank Moore is a very celebrated artist in Berkeley. He's also the producer of our show in Berkeley TV, as well as his own shows. And he's famous for his artwork, and he's about to become even more famous for his politics, because he is declaring his candidacy for president of the United States. He's running in 2008. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I have been running for a year. He declared his candidacy about a year ago.
Well, okay. Well, you're declaring it again on this show. And it's great. It's an important candidacy. I've read your platform, and maybe you could give out where people can read the platform.
Yes, they can read it at www.frankmoreforpresident08.com, and it's Frank and then MOORE for president08.com.
And let me ask you, what made you decide you needed to run for president? Because, of course, this is a lot of work.
I did not see anyone are running who I would want to vote for. Who M.A. made sense.
Well, I agree. I think Frank Moore's platform makes more sense than anything I've seen from Democrats or Republicans. The thing that makes the most sense is pulling the troops out of this terrible war that we are now observing the fourth anniversary of. And there's a lot of other important platform points on that platform, which I would like to talk with you about on another show. But tonight's show, we're basically observing the fourth anniversary of this...
disaster.
There you go.
This crime.
There you go.
I-C-H-A-N-C-H-A-L challenge the other candidate to... To debate me.
All right. You hear that, Hillary? You hear that, John McCain?
Hillary will not be pull us out of Iraq.
I haven't heard any of the major candidates say they want to pull us out of Iraq. I mean, the people of the United States have expressed through polls, through demonstrations, through all kinds of ways that we want out of this war, even the ones who cheerleaded this war to begin with because we didn't know any better. But now we've got a clear, sweeping majority that won out, but none of the candidates are really saying they're going to bring us out, except Frank, that I know of.
Because they are L.
It's because they are financed by huge corporations that are making money on this war.
Yes. Is that what you were going to say? Yes. They're locked into that.
Money is what speaks for people. And if you're financed by people that are making money on the war, how are you going to speak against the war? You can't. So it's just a question of financing, and Frank doesn't have any war profiteer funders, does he?
No.
No, not yet. They might knock on your door. Hey, so how do we vote for you? We have to write you in, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Okay. And I guess you don't get to be in primaries. You just, you're the eventually the big race, we get to write you in. Oh, they're writing Frank in already in the primaries.
No, for the election.
They're going to write him in the general election.
They will be writing him in.
Okay, write in Frank Moore, and check out his platform that is at his site. Give out the address one more time.
Yes, Frank Moore for President 08.com.
Okay, Linda, Frank, give me a big kiss. Goodbye, please.
Oh, Frank, I love you.
I love you.
I love you. And I love your language.
Mm.
And I love your philosophy.
Mm.
Kisses.
Kisses.
Mm. Yeah.
And hugs and strokes and gestures.
And always keep it up and keep it rolling.
All right, we hope to see you sometime.
Okay.
Yeah, down here at the speakeasy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
You'll be peaceful. Take
Big
care.
Big hug to Mikey.
Big hug to Frank.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care, guys. We're going to talk about global orgasm now.
That's
okay,
next.
Global orgasm for peace. Is there a way that somehow sexual pleasure can stop violence? I think there are a few ways.
Kent's on the line here.
And we're going to talk about one possible way with Kent. Hello, Kent.
Hello, Susie. How you doing?
Good. Can you speak up a little bit into your phone? Get your voice right into your phone there.
Okay, I'll talk up loud, okay?
There you go. That sounds much better.
Great. I can hear you great.
Okay. So tell us more about, you told us already some stuff about the global orgasm. We talked about it right around the holidays, right before the actual global orgasm. You had called on the show to tell us all about how everyone was going to have an orgasm at a certain time on the winter solstice. And we did it. We actually did one in the morning and one in the evening just to make sure. We had several orgasms here.
And then we did another one just in case.
Yeah, just in case we were somehow, because we weren't sure exactly of the time. We tried to cover all our orgasmic bases, and tell us a little bit about the project and if there were any results from all these people having orgasms for peace. Oh, and as we were having our orgasms, of course, we were concentrating on world peace, thinking about peace, peace, peace. I kept saying that when I was sucking your cock. Yeah, go on.
You know, it's a more of a collective consciousness. There's power in numbers, and the more there is, the better the results, of course.
Right. Can you speak what kind of phone are you talking on?
I'm talking on a remote phone. This is the best phone that I have in the house. So.
Yeah. Okay. What can we do? Can we? Okay. We're going to squeak if we. Oh, no, we don't want to do that. Okay. All right, Kent. So tell us, explain what the Global Orgasm Project is again for people who don't know.
Okay, what it was started by Donna Sheehan and
Paul,
and her partner Paul, and I can't remember his last name, but anyway, they were the ones who spearheaded the Bearing Witness project going around, where people would go and take their clothes off and make messages.
Spell out peace with their naked bodies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it caught on worldwide, in fact, all over the place. And still.
Oh, yeah. People still send those pictures of the people with, you know, naked bodies spelling out words like peace and love.
Correct. Correct. Or in Peach Bush or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we decided to put together a project here, which, you know, it's about getting as many people together, advertising over the internet, of course, to collectively get everyone together and have an orgasm during that day to see if there's going to be a difference because of this as we think about peace while we're having an orgasm, and so we can change the consciousness of the other people in the powers that be out there. And
the whole idea is that the orgasm for peace is somehow going to change the vibrations of the world.
Correct.
And, well, it's a good idea.
Anyway, they plan
but
on having another one this coming winter solstice.
Right.
Well.
But let's talk about the first one, because, you know, I had like three orgasms for peace, and I want to know, were there any results? How many other people had these orgasms for peace? Do you have any statistics on it? And did
The only thing I have, and I just got an email from Paul and Donna about the results from Princeton.
Princeton.
I'll give you the website here of where to go, but you can actually see the chart, and there was an improvement.
So Princeton University was testing a vibration of some sort.
Correct. And they use eggs, and they have like a biofeedback machine on these eggs to test the.
Is this a little bit like Wilhelm Reich's Orgone box?
There you go. Exactly. And,
okay.
But anyway, there was an improvement.
There was.
There was. Did you see the chart?
That must have been me. I came big.
You came really big that time. Yeah, that was you. Now, the thing is, okay, I'm glad there was an improvement, but we're still at this war. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're doing this show, is it's the fourth anniversary of the Iraq War. And,
right.
And we're still going on, and they're still killing people there, you know, in a big way.
But we have not gotten to the point where we're at war with Iran.
Well, that's
true. That was planned. So that was who knows?
We're not there yet. I mean, maybe we've headed it off by this orgasm.
Maybe so.
Well, actually,
I think we should try to have more orgasms before the next winter solstice. I mean, how about spring equinox?
Well, you know what? I suggested at least the summer solstice to Paul and Donna. Back to them today. I have not heard back from them, but I think that would be good if we could have several of them on the equinox and on the summer solstice.
Yeah, I think we got to do more of these orgasms. We obviously have to create a lot more pleasure to combat the violence.
Exactly, I agree.
And how about yourself? I mean, just a little, you know, private note. Did you have an orgasm for peace?
Absolutely.
Good. Was it a good one?
I want to know about Donna. I don't want to know about Paul.
Oh, Donna. Did she have an orgasm for peace?
I don't know.
I would think so. It's her project.
Oh, okay.
It's her project. So, I personally do not know them personally. I just know them through the email, and, you know, the communication and so forth. And, of course, I wanted to advertise them to you. And so I'm pretty much a go-in-between right now.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, we appreciate your being the go-between. Okay.
To go to the Princeton website, and so you can actually see this chart. In fact, Princeton is recommending that does because there was an improvement, but they want to double check to make sure.
Uh-huh. And so this is on Princeton University's site?
Yes, if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you a little better now, actually.
Okay. It's MOO Sphere, that's SPHERE, dot Princeton, dot edu, that's EDU, / global orgasm, dot HTML.
All right.
Again, that's MOOSPHERE dot Princeton dot edu, that's EDU, / global orgasm dot HTML.
Good.
And I also wanted to mention is that we really need to be supporting pro-peace candidates for the presidency.
Well, we just talked to one.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, Frank Moore. He's a pro-peace candidate for the presidency.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, from Ohio, there's Dennis Kucinich. And
yeah, so he's running for president again, Kucinich?
Yes, uh-huh. And also Representative Ron Paul from Texas is also very much against the war efforts. In fact, he's more libertarian than he is Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting that these candidates that are really against the war, you don't hear about them in the mainstream.
No, all the main ones are not against the war. I mean, they say they are sort of against the war, maybe, but they're so equivocal. Like Obama, he's against the war, but you're not sure if he's really going to pull troops out.
Yeah, what is Laughlin? You know, is he, going to be catering in? And, the thing is, they realize that they have to dance to their drum beat in order to be elected.
Well, I don't think they actually have. I think they need their sponsors. They need their funders, and those people are corporations making money off the war.
And I think we have to we have to bring
democracy. Big business out there.
I think we have to bring the. You know, we're the only democracy in the world that can't get rid of a president in midterm, because we only have two parties, and those two parties think the same way. In Europe, in England, in Italy, in Spain, there's 30 parties representing people, and we can get rid of the premier and the president when they fuck up. And this man is fucked up. So this is not really democracy here. We're not even elected by the people.
No. I mean, it's already pre-planned. He's going to get it.
So before we bring democracy to Iraq, we, the people, should bring democracy to the United States.
Well, here's what I heard from Mark Perkel on the Internet. If the United States government doesn't get us out of Iraq at this point, then we are going to have a civil war here, not just there, but the people are going to rise up and take the government back from both the Republicans and the Democrats.
I don't think so.
And I agree that there already is a lot going on right now. There's a lot of unrest. There are people on the Internet. They're getting informed what really happened with 9/11 and what really happened behind the scenes and who's been responsible. And it is this web goes on and on and on. And people are smarting up out there, and I really do agree with what you said. There is going to be something out there, some sort of a revolution.
You think so?
Very, very possible.
I think there's going to be a revolution, and I'm going to call George later and just say, turn off the Internet, and then we'll be in the streets. But before that, most Americans are paid off for $300 a week in salary.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid of losing the little bitzels that they have.
The little trickle down.
The little trickles that they have. It's true. So we'll see. I mean, we're fighting our revolution here from our little media that we have, and that's what we believe in. And I'm, you know, it's a drop in the bucket, but it's our drop.
Well, the interesting thing is one of the ways that we stopped the Vietnam War is I lost most of my friends who were Republicans and most of my liberal friends who were for the war. And remember that during the Vietnam War, there were two thoughts, two ways to win the war. One was the Republican way, which...
Blow them all up at once.
Yeah, nuke them.
Nuke them.
And the other way to
the
win
Democratic
the,
way was do it slowly.
Kill them one by one.
Yeah.
Okay? And so my liberal friends and my right-wing friends, I banned them from my house. I said, enough of this. You're idiots, and you're going to pay because you're going to lose my friendship. And that was done at dinner tables around the country.
Well, but of course, one of the reasons that we got out of Vietnam, and it did take us quite a while, was that people started losing their friends and their sons and daughters and fathers. I mean, not too many daughters. It was mostly guys being drafted. But people, you know, there was a draft. And now this is part of the class war that Bush is perpetrating. And that is that there is this acceptance of the war among a lot of people in this country because they don't know anybody that's dying in it. You know, because it's being fought by a so-called volunteer army that are only volunteering because they have very few other choices in life. So, anyway, Kent?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing the effects of the global orgasm. I'm glad it does seem to be having some effect. I'm not sure we know what that means. It's like reading tea leaves, but... It's good, and hey, it's a lot of fun trying this way. This is the kind of protest I enjoy. You don't have to get out into the streets. You can just stay in your bedroom and protest the war by having an orgasm.
And when you're in the grocery line, okay, or when you're on a bus, or whenever you're anywhere in public, you turn around and you talk about the insanity and the criminality of this thing, and you'll see people in line haunch down, and then you'll know the Republicans.
But some people will say, yeah, man. Hey, dude, I agree with that.
Hey, dude, get out of line.
Well, just as long as these neocon TV and radio programs and so forth keep on banging away, you know, they're doing what they can. But you know what's interesting? Is that more people are turning them off and turning to alternative news on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we love the internet. The internet is the global village.
You know, here we have a real true freedom of speech. We can do whatever we want on the internet, which is great. You can't do that on the mainstream media.
But we really have to watch out for these guys because they can make it a lot more difficult for us to keep the internet free. In other words, just charge more for bandwidth and
because ultimately like censorship comes down to economics. That's how they do it. They break you, so you can't talk anymore.
So that could be coming if the fascistas stay in our house, the White House. Anyway, thank you so much, Kent. And let's have another global orgasm soon. I want to. You know, think about peace when I come again.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
There you go.
Yeah, I think about bonobos. It's the bonobo way. Peace through pleasure.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Kent. Take care.
Have a great evening.
Okay. And we are Radio Suzy 1 on the World Wide Web, Worldwide Revolution, Worldwide Sexual Revelation. And we are talking tonight about the disaster that we call the Iraq War, which isn't really a war. It I don't think we can call it a war. It's an invasion that turned into an occupation.
It's the business of war.
That's the war, and it, exactly, it's a war business. Well, that somebody was asking me, so do you think Bush is the war president? I said, no, he's the war business president.
Well, there's something also interesting because president of Russia has warned the United States now on several occasions that if you invade Iran, we will be there.
Ah.
That's dangerous stuff, and that's why...
Well, maybe Kent is right and we won't invade Iran because we're all busy having orgasms.
No, and because the Russians are building up their armed forces because they have seen America as the superpower.
Yeah.
And they know the superpower now as a bully, as an invader.
Yeah,
okay?
Why couldn't we just be a nice superpower for at least a few years?
And that's why China is building their military. That's why they just shot a satellite out of the sky, literally, you know, because nobody believes us anymore. We are not a good superpower. We are a superpower that goes and invades and kills. Hey, listen, at this point, we've killed about as many people, and by the time this war is over, we will have killed as many people as Hussein to bring democracy. What kind of democracy is that?
Oh, now speaking of which, I just want to I want to read something from Counterpunch, from the publisher Alexander Cockburn's brother, Patrick Cockburn, who is an incredible unembedded reporter in Iraq, and he's been there for many, many years, way before the American invasion, but he's stayed through this horror. I mean, I can't believe it. He's like this English guy, and he is brave. This guy he's staying in a hotel in Baghdad, and he's going around the country. Not as much as he used to, though. Actually, are we going to get my other Counterpunch friend, Michael Dickinson from Turkey?
Michael Dickinson in Turkey. Let me call him.
Okay, we can call him. And I'll start reading this piece by Patrick Cockburn. I just wanted to get into what is really going on in Iraq, because we've been talking to Americans, of course, about our experience from over here of this war, and of course we're not right there, but it's terrible for us. But can you imagine being in Iraq? Patrick Cockburn is there, and he writes, 4 years ago, in the middle of the U.S. invasion, I drove safely from Arbil in northern Iraq to Baghdad. There were heaps of discarded weapons beside the road and long lines of former Iraqi soldiers walking home. Signs of battle were few, aside from the hulks of burned-out tanks, but they all seemed to have been hit by U.S. aircraft after their crews had fled. If I tried to make the same journey today, I would be killed or kidnapped long before I reach Baghdad. Kurdish ministers in the Iraqi government dare not travel by road between the capital and their homeland. Three bodyguards of the foreign minister, Hoshyar Zebari, were ambushed and killed when they tried to do so a month ago. Tony Blair and George Bush still occasionally imply that the picture of Iraq as a war-torn hell is an exaggeration by the media. They suggest, though not as forcibly as they did a couple of years ago, that parts of the country are relatively peaceful. Nothing could be more untrue. In reality, the violence is grossly understated. The Baker-Hamilton report by senior Republicans and Democrats led by James Baker took a single day last summer when the U.S. Army reported 93 acts of violence in Iraq and asked American intelligence to re-examine the evidence. They found the real figure was 1,100. The U.S. military had deliberately understated the violence by factor of over 10. And this is James Baker we're talking about here, consigliere to the Bush family. And he's even trying to take Junior to task here, saying, look, this is a disaster. It's amazing. Patrick Cockburn goes on to say, getting rid of Saddam Hussein was not going to be the main problem when the U.S. and Britain invaded 4 years ago. His army would fall apart, as it had done in 1991, when he was expelled from Kuwait, because Iraqis simply would not fight for him. But the outcome of the invasion of 2003 was predictably different from the war in 1991, and not just because there is now a large American army in the heartland of the Middle East, destabilizing the whole region. U.S. forces had not pressed on to Baghdad 16 years ago, partly because Washington did not want to see Saddam replaced by Shia religious parties with possible links to Iran. That is exactly what has happened now, because 60% of the Iraqi population is Shia. Less predictable was the disaster facing ordinary Iraqis. Most wanted rid of Saddam Hussein because they expected a better life after his fall. Since they had oil reserves comparable to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, Iraqis felt, why could they not have an equivalent standard of living to Saudis and Kuwaitis? In fact, almost every aspect of Iraqi day-to-day life has got worse over the last 4 years. In May 2003, people in Baghdad were getting 16 to 24 hours of electricity a day. Today, the official figure is just 6 hours a day, and even that is on the optimistic side. Now, in a city with one of the hottest climates in the world, it is catastrophic when fridges, freezers, or air conditioners cannot be used. There are 4.8 million Iraqi children under the age of 5 who have lived most of their lives since the fall of Saddam Hussein. UNICEF figures show that 20% of them are so severely malnourished that their growth is stunted. Under Saddam Hussein, most Iraqis worked for the state. This worked well while he had oil revenues to pay them. But after 1990, UN sanctions meant that millions of people who had enjoyed a middle-class standard of living became totally impoverished, and 4 years ago, more than half of Iraqis were unemployed. One of the worst scandals of the occupation is that they still are. Although billions of dollars have been spent, billions were stolen. For all the money supposedly being spent on developing the economy, there were no cranes to be seen in Baghdad except a cluster in the green zone at work on a vast new American embassy. But whatever the material failings of life, over the last 4 years, it is the lack of security that has dominated everything else for Iraqis. By the end of 2003, I could already see mothers becoming hysterical at a school near my Baghdad hotel, because if they could not find their children, they immediately feared they had been kidnapped. Since 2003, Iraqi life has become drenched by violence. Many Iraqis now carry two sets of papers to pass through Sunni and Shia areas, but often it is not enough. The UN using figures from Baghdad morgue and the health ministry says 3,462 civilians were killed in Iraq in November and 2,914 in December. Many died at the hands of death squads picked up on the street or caught at checkpoints. And we go on. Yes, we're having a bad time here in the United States, being the perpetrators of this ugly war. But out there in Iraq, they are the real victims of it. And life is not better from this liberation. They have been liberated into a holy hell. And neighboring Iraq is a country called Turkey. And they did not actually invade Iraq. They didn't want to be bad neighbors. They didn't join up with the grand coalition of the willing.
Yeah, and they blocked one of the invasion routes, actually.
Actually, they did. They made it a little tougher for us to get in there, which pissed us off, right. But, you know, they were right. We shouldn't have gone in there. And of course, now they're the neighbors, and they got to put up with all the fallout from being in a country next to a country that's falling apart.
Okay.
And one of the fine citizens of this country—I'm not sure actually if he's a citizen, but he's living in this country, a resident.
He sounds very British.
He
to
sounds
me.
British. Yes. Okay, good. I've actually never talked to him, but I've been corresponding with him.
And here he is
on the internet, Michael Dickinson. Welcome to Radio Suzy One. Hello.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, nice to speak to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's morning out there in Turkey.
Yeah, it's 8:45 here in the morning.
And I was just explaining to my listeners that that we've never spoken. We've just corresponded.
Yeah.
And you've sent me some incredible art, political agitprop posters and plays and
oh, you read my play.
Collages. Yes, a play about Jesus, and very interesting mix of art and politics and religion and sex. My favorite subject.
Well, the sex came in recently as Easter, I think, the rising.
The sex came in when you met me, I thought.
Yeah, I remember I did a picture of Mr. Bush's wife that you called Barbara Bush or something.
Yes, yes. Beautiful.
Yeah. And I really admire your writing as well. I was just reading your thing about spring recently, which is
spring, yes, it's spring. It's spring equinox that these Gulf warriors have ruined for us. They've made this the observance of the anniversary of the war, which I feel is perma-war now. We're going to be observing this every year.
It's the kind of peace that down in Texas say makes your butt sweat.
But really, spring equinox is a great time for sex and peace and love and Dionysian ecstasy.
They had that big demonstration, when was it, 2 days ago in many countries, but as...
Well, demonstrations are fun, you know, like...
Well, they can be if the weather's good, but the thing is that the media tends not to draw a blind eye. I mean, you can see whose side they seem
Well, yes, and tonight we've been talking about the war and, of course, blaming the Bushites and their cronies and the Democrats for being their handmaidens, but the media is really, they're the cheerleaders.
Well, who are they controlled by? I mean, like, who owns the media? Isn't it someone like Rupert Murdoch or somebody, or some big, rich man who says what goes on their stations and things like that? They should be pointed at, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why Rupert Murdoch, who knows that boobs sell just as well as war, I mean, he knows that. He knows you can put tits on the cover of a newspaper, it'll sell like hotcakes. Same with war. So why not the tits? Come on. But no, he wants to be a moral guy, what he calls moral, and no more tits on the page two. And now
has that been censored? I didn't know that.
Well, not in the United States. We don't get tits. Maybe you do in
England.
England, you still do.
Turkey is becoming more and more titty. And it's, when I first came here, they used to have them blanked out with little nipples.
Turkey's getting more titty.
Covered over.
Good.
Yeah,
good for Turkey. Well, you know, we have warm feelings towards the Turks.
Well, if they want to join the European Union, they better have some titties.
Yeah, really. So Michael, you, we're also talking about what we were doing when the bombs began to fall.
Right.
Yes.
Well, on the actual, just incidentally, on the day of the 9/11 fiasco, that thing where they crashed into the thing, that's when I had just started making collages again, because in the early 80s, that's when I started doing political collage against Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. I was living in London then. That's when I first started making political collages out of a collection of magazines which I've been collecting for English teaching, and suddenly the pictures all started falling together. But anyway, after I'd left London to come to Turkey, I gave up political collaging. Because I'd got into a lot of trouble in England from all sorts of things, and I came to Istanbul, and I thought, right, my new role will just
You got into trouble, so you were running from trouble to Istanbul on the Orient Express?
Well, I kept
chased by constables?
I was very quiet in Istanbul for, like, practically the 20 years I've been here, actually, and only last year I suddenly came into trouble with my political collages again, because I did a picture of the Prime Minister of Turkey, with the body of a dog on the lead of George Bush, sort of implying that...
Oh!
And
we were just talking about how courageous they were not to follow George Bush into the coalition of the willing.
They have a law in Turkey, which I discovered to my cost, that insulting Turkishness is against the law. And I was in prison for 10 days.
Oh, really? We've heard about this insulting Turkishness law. Now that's pretty crazy.
I was in prison for 18 months for insulting American sensibilities. So
did some guy? There was a couple
like scandals over that. With one, there was one woman who was pregnant, and she insulted Turkishness by a novel she wrote, right?
Yeah, that's
but
right.
They let her go, and then there was a guy that died of a heart attack, or he died somehow, or no, somebody killed him. Somebody.
Right. The drink. Dink.
Dink.
An Armenian writer.
He was right because he was insulting Turkishness by saying there was an Armenian genocide. I guess
there had been a genocide, and he was shot by a 17-year-old boy in the street. But there's a possibility that the killer might have been, you know, put up to it by. This seems to be quite a lot of right-wing fascists around.
Well, even if he wasn't directly put up to it, you know, the media fans those flames, you know, and with. I mean, if you've got this law against Turkishness, then someone, a 17-year-old nutcase, might feel very patriotic.
Yeah, you know what happened in Turkey to Susan, right?
My scandal. I have a scandal. I don't know if I can go to Turkey. It's terrible. Right. It's a tragedy. I feel
horrible. I want to go on one of those Turkish boats that they build, those beautiful boats. But what are they called?
The Turkish boats?
Yeah.
Gravy boats?
What are they called?
I'm not sure. Like you mean going on the tour around the coast?
Yeah, they look like old pirate ships. They're beautiful. But Susan had her own Turkish.
You know about
adventure.
What happened to me?
I didn't know it was in Turkey. I heard.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. In a nutshell, I have to tell you this. It's terrible. But right around the time we invaded Iraq, I guess it was more or less in May. I wrote a piece called "The Rape of Iraq." And it was about the invasion, and it used rape as a metaphor for the invasion. And it was about how we came in like a rapist, and that we expected our victims to smile, and that sometimes a victim might smile. You know, victims of rape might smile just because they don't want to get killed. And anyway, it was about the all the killing we were doing, as well as the burning of great museums and this and that. And it was a pretty emotional piece, and of course it's called Rape of Iraq, so it got a lot of action. And months pass, and I get a call from the Boston Globe, from this fast talker reporter, and he says to me, I want to talk to you about the fact that American soldiers are raping Iraqi women, and your contention that American soldiers are raping Iraqi women. I said, what? He says, well, aren't you saying that American soldiers have been raping Iraqi women? And I said, well, I haven't actually said that. No, I don't know if they are. I don't know. This at this point, we didn't know. Now, of course,
as we know that that awful case where they did rape them.
Yes, of course. But at this time, this was earlier. And they raped a young girl and killed her and her whole family. And other rapes have also been reported.
Yeah, but ones not reported, I'm sure.
Yes. But at this time, there weren't rapes reported for whatever reason, or I hadn't heard of them. And so I said, I haven't heard of that, but I know they are killing Iraqi women, which frankly I think is worse, as well as the men and the children. And you know, rape is bad, but death is worse in my morality. And so he says, no, we're talking about rape. You made some accusation. I said, no, I have not. He says, well, that's what they're saying all over Turkey. I said, Turkey? He says, yeah. And then he started to believe me that I really didn't know what he was talking about. And he says, you know, you are being quoted as saying that that American soldiers are raping Iraqi women. I said, well, I haven't said that. I said, you know what? I wrote a piece a while back, a few months ago, called The Rape of Iraq. But it's not about that. So he reads it, and he goes, oh, yeah, of course, you're using rape as a metaphor. And then he says, well, that's not what they're saying. He says, Yeni Safak is the name of the magazine?
Safak would be.
Yeah, you know that magazine?
I've heard of it that time.
Okay, so they were the first to pick up this story that Dr. Susan Block, an American sex therapist, has inside information that that American soldiers are raping Iraqi women. And they write this article, and it goes all over the place. And anyway, the horrible thing is that then the man that strapped on some bombs and visited the Bank of England, I guess, or
HSBC? Right.
Yeah. He supposedly had read this article. His son said that he read this article about the raping of Iraqi women by American soldiers, and that then he decided to blow up the bank and himself. And so I became
responsible
for this. And I got, and so he of course believes me, the reporter, that I, you know, that this was a total misinterpretation,
right.
But anyway,
it was just a quote taken out of context,
but
saying,
anyway, whatever, I mean, I say whatever in a way, because the fact is that American soldiers were raping Iraqi women,
yeah.
And so what if I said that? Anyway, it goes into
raping American women.
Well, I mean, all different which ways.
Well, you know, that's you don't have to be a genie in a bottle to know that war brings rape and
right.
pillage and all those
and
kinds
if
of
things. You are the powerful conquerors, then you can
right.
do what you like.
That's
but
right.
The cherry on top of this, my personal disaster related to the Iraq
American
war,
embassy.
Was that the American embassy issues a proclamation that I am a whore. I mean, basically, just to say, you know, Dr. Susan Block does not speak for, you know, she's like practically a porn queen or something. And so I called them up and I said, excuse me, did you read what I wrote? I mean, I understand you're taking moral umbrage at my style, but I didn't say that your boys there are raping Iraqi women.
And Mr., what was his name? A British name, sort of.
Pinkerton was on the phone with
right.
me a lot. He was very anxious. We issued a statement saying that I did not even say that. Not only am I a whore, but I didn't even say it. So.
And they hadn't read the article.
No, they didn't. They didn't bother to read the article. They didn't care about that. So.
I had a collage. You can visit my website, by the way. It's Yabanji. If you go to Google, put Yabanji. That's Y-A-B-A-N. J-I, and I had a picture recently called The Rape of Palestine, which is one of my columns.
Right.
And did you see it?
I did.
It's a map of Israel, just like with legs on it, carrying off a Palestinian woman. I mean, mm-hmm. it was interesting.
Very vivid.
Yeah.
A metaphor, but yet.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, countries around the world, the world is a bloody mess, really.
It's a bloody mess, and I was chased with hate mail for a while, and
really?
Call. Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, I get hate mail anyway, but
yeah,
this was an avalanche, an absolute tsunami
from
mostly Americans. Yeah.
Yeah,
mostly
yeah.
Americans.
Mostly from the South.
Oh yeah.
You
oh.
know the poor people that we have to support because yeah. we've kept them so ignorant.
Threatening
That's
to rip me into
ignorant,
little pieces
really.
To hang me. I mean, you could see at. See, at this time, the wartime fervor was high. They thought
yeah.
they were really on a roll. They thought they were mission accomplished. This was what was going on. And I
do
was just, I could just be thrown to the lions because what do they need me for? America was ascending to its rightful position as lords of the world.
Yeah, but do you think that attitude has changed a bit since because of,
yeah, yeah.
you know, like Dixie Chicks were, again, exorberated, whatever the word is.
Yeah, it has changed.
And now they won an award, and it seems to be that the percentage of Americans are more against the war than the...
It's changed, but you know, for people, I guess people who have been against the war since the beginning, it's kind of like you're suspicious of your... You know, your spouse comes back to you saying, I've changed. I'm no longer going to be beating you and
yeah,
abusing you.
Right.
And you're going, you just...
I have Hillary Clinton next term.
Oh, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, we're probably going to have Hillary Clinton and Obama as vice president of the United States.
You think?
States.
Oh, I mean,
yeah,
I like the idea of a woman and a black guy, but,
yeah.
I mean, I don't...
But not them.
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
They are, it's like
could be a good sex movie.
It could be, you know. If, I mean, it'll be more fun, maybe. But Hillary...
The Clintons are close friends of the Bushes. I mean, they're hand in hand. I mean...
Yeah.
If I was... I mean, if one is supposed to be the rival, and even Nancy, what's her name, is sitting next to...
Pelosi.
Cheney in the house all the time, and they have the little chats and everything like
well,
that. I mean,
you know that both Bush... and Clinton and every president of the United States as a member of the Trilateral Commission. And you know about the Trilateral Commission, right?
Oh, now we're getting into conspiracy theories.
Well, no, it's not a conspiracy. The Trilateral Commission meets every year, and they decide how they split up the wealth of the world with Prince Bernard of Holland.
Yeah, isn't they meet at some hotel?
Yes, that's correct.
And
nobody can go there.
That's right.
Yeah. Every president of the United States for almost since the beginning is a member of the Trilateral Commission, or you cannot become president of the United States.
Right, yeah, and it's all to do with money, really. I wanted to ask, go ahead.
And then I want to ask you something. We both had an idea at the same time.
All right, so I'll just tell you my idea, which came to me last year, and it's about changing the world, like, almost immediately, to become a world without money. I mean, this may sound crazy, but I mean, it's like a utopian idea of a moneyless world where money does not exist anymore.
Interesting idea. Sounds
like our company.
We don't have any money.
And me, actually, at the moment, I'm telling fortunes on the street. But that's fun, anyway. But anyway, this idea of how we're going to get this moneyless world, I tell the idea, I ask people, in Turkey, you know, students and young people, and they all say, yeah, moneyless idea is a great idea, but it's utopia, we can't do it. So I tell them that we can get it, and it's going to be a world strike on one day. It's in the future, it's in 2012. We need that time because the idea has to spread, that's like 5 years away. And on the opening day of the Olympic Games in 2012, when the torch lights the flame, that is the signal for everyone in the world who wants a moneyless world to stop work and say, right, the change is now.
Sounds like Italy. Lots of strikes.
Yeah, and then the leader's worth
this
nothing.
Is just one and it's finished, basically. So keep that in mind.
I will.
2012 World Strike.
That
2012
sounds great.
World Strike. I'll be there.
We'll start advertising it.
But I do think there's another way there will be a moneyless world.
Uh-huh.
It's the hard way. After the nuclear holocaust.
Then,
you know.
Who can be left then?
There will be some people left, you know.
It's kind of like the idea of, arriving on an island after the ship gone down at sea with a group of people, and you're not going to say, right, I am the king of this island, and you will pay me homage. Everybody would have to be together again, and...
There would be more trade and not... I mean, money would be kind of useless.
Exactly. Trade is like... why should we pay for water, electricity, and things? And it's just all a trap by
people.
I like the idea of more bartering. Just more bartering, more trading.
You're absolutely right. And that's the way it was done many, many centuries ago and years ago.
And I'll tell you something. I mean, the idea of doing it at 2012, you know, that's cool and everything and sexy, but... I think we should try doing it gradually. I think we should do more trading amongst each other.
And we do that as much as possible.
We do that as much as we can here at the Speakeasy. We do it a lot.
But we have the system of delivery of around like the supermarkets, everything. We have the global. We do have a global world now, so we do take things from different countries. We should give them more in a certain case. But all the whole superstructure is there. Everything could continue much more smoothly. You go to the supermarket, you take what you want, and your groceries for the week or whatever, and, why should one pay? I mean, I think greed would disappear in that case because, anyway, we shall see.
I totally agree with you. By the way, I don't want to get you paranoid. I think this conversation is actually being recorded, not by us. But
I think you're right. My phone has I've noticed an echo on it. Yeah. And because of my problem from last year, I think I was followed by the police in the streets. I had to leave the country, but then I came back, and I'm on a tourist visa at the moment.
Well, wait till they hear you've been talking to me.
Hello from Susan.
Hi,
I mean, I am very honored to be talking to you, actually. You're an intelligent, beautiful person.
Oh, thank you, Michael. And I'm just loving talking to you. I do want to know a little bit more about your life in Turkey. You know, I mean, we aside from running from the law, I mean, what is it like to be in the country next to Iraq? Is there any...
Well, one doesn't really feel that. I mean, you have to remind yourself, I suppose. But, life goes on here, and there are people from, you know, Kurds from down south, they are attempting to come into the city because, and generally, face unemployment here. But there was...
You don't have other Iraqis coming in besides the Kurds?
I have definitely, but I'm sure there are because, I mean, there's a great... exodus from there, but they're not tending to come here. They're tending to go to Syria, and they might have trouble coming through.
They might have trouble coming through because, I mean, there's mixed feelings between the Turks and the Arab
Iraqis. Well, the Turkish people here are generally wholly against the war.
The war.
And against they're not against Americans. I wouldn't say, you know, they're very welcoming people. I mean, Istanbul... Don't be afraid to come as a tourist in.
No, actually, we're going to probably next year.
Love to go to Istanbul.
The year after, we're going to take one of those coastal boats.
The blue cruise.
I forget what they're
called. So what do? You teach English in Turkey?
Well,
in
at
Istanbul?
The moment, I'm not teaching English because, I've changed since my thing. I was offered a job when I came back with one of these courses, but teaching English. But they pay nothing, and I don't want to become... And I was teaching at a university last year, where I'd been for 2 years. Mm-hmm. But the students are all rich, spoiled brats, and they don't... I was teaching the first-year English because they have to do this course, and they're not interested at all. But now what I'm doing is I'm telling fortunes in the streets with rune stones. You know runes?
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I am at the moment, and so I've become a falger, that means a fortune teller. And today also, I'm going into town to audition for, I'm doing a production of, a lunchtime production of Cinderella, which I wrote for 2 years ago, and I'm just going to choose...
You know, you British blokes are interesting people.
Really?
You really are interesting.
Unexpected. Well, I mean, the way I wouldn't have guessed that you'd be reading runes in the streets of Istanbul, but would love to get my fortune told. So
I can do it by phone as well, but not at the moment.
Not at the moment. I don't want to know
what's
happening.
Email, in fact. You can tell me a question, and I'll give you an answer.
Okay.
We should be in touch more often and talk about life in Istanbul. And you
mounted a production. It was about Jesus. I forget the name of the
Yeah. My play, The Rich Young Man.
The Rich Young Man.
Which you can read the whole script on Counterpunch if you visit Counterpunch and look for...
We all visit Counterpunch religiously.
Okay.
Sometimes
I have to avoid it because it depresses me.
Well, we would love to have you as our correspondent in Turkey.
Right.
And so we'll wake you up every once in a while and find out what's going on the streets.
Not too early.
Yeah.
No, not too early.
Well, I am in the streets now. I mean,
you literally are.
I meet some really nice and interesting people, and I actually, you know, see the poverty because I'm working along a guy's selling, tissue papers to people in the street.
Well, listen, we'll send you some squirt DVDs. There's a lot of interest in squirting in Turkey. We sell a lot of DVDs.
We do
there.
Sell a lot of DVDs to Turkey. Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, you're going to pass those out, too, and make a little money.
Oh, yeah, and you'll have other authorities after.
And then you'll have other
authorities. And I just heard the beep again.
I'm hearing
the little beep. Yes, we are being recorded. Interesting.
Yeah, right.
It's a satellite. That's a satellite beep. Okay, so we have Stuart on the line.
We love Turkey.
Yeah, so do I.
With gravy.
I want to stay here, really. I love this place.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to visit there. It's a legendary...
We're
going to
visit in a couple of years.
Well, if I'm still here, inshallah, you are...
Inshallah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Inshallah. Peace. Through pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
Bye, Michael. Big kiss.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
Hi, Stuart.
Stuart.
Hi.
Hello. Hello, Stuart.
Yes. I can hear you.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
A little cloudy. It's 3 a.m. where I am.
Where are you?
Where are you?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Ah.
Asheville, North Carolina.
How's it going there in Asheville?
It's an interesting place. Have you ever been here?
No, but you know, I know
we used to be on the radio there.
We used to be on the radio
for
there.
For several years.
For years. And isn't little Shiva from Asheville, North Carolina?
Charlotte.
Or she's from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Is that
Sorry.
In North Carolina?
Yeah. Right. Or South Carolina or somewhere. Anyway, we love you.
Well, thanks. When I first came here, my old friend, he commutes back and forth between Los Angeles and here. He says it's the lesbian capital of the world here.
Lesbian capital.
Well, you know why? That's why I think Little Shiva might be from there, because although she's bi, and she published a little magazine called, what is it called? QZ? Anyway.
QZ.
I think it's called QZ. You don't know about it.
I
All right, so what's going on?
I know that the purple pages are on every newsstand here.
The purple pages, right. Well, those sound like a lesbian thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's fun. There's a surprise around every corner.
Yeah. So, what else is going on?
Is it pretty cool there? I mean, like, we're looking for a place to move.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always, the place is always hopping on the weekends. Just a lot of community stuff, like concerts in the park, and there's a drumming circle. And spontaneous block parties. Like New Year's Eve is just one big block party in downtown. They pretty much close off all the streets.
Cool.
And so it is.
So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, you folks are talking about the war, and
let's talk
that's
about the war a little bit.
Thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it really shouldn't be that important that the ruling class kind of keeps us under their thumb by making it the most important thing in the world, right?
You know, you're actually right.
Yeah. And I mean, anti-war is kind of a dumb thing to be, because there is not enough force in the world to counteract the force of war. What you have to do is...
Yeah, there is one force that counteracts war.
I know.
The individual. I won't go.
Is love a force?
Well, I'm trying to understand your philosophy here.
Okay, I think it's Zen. I think it's like judo.
I think what he's saying, if you get into the pits with them, and that's all you're talking about, then they got you.
Well, yeah, you're part of the media, I guess.
Right. You're like Andy Kaufman, and you're wrestling a sumo, right?
Well, you know, but we don't talk about the war all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Mostly we talk about sex.
Mostly we talk about sex, and we talk about
You're right. You're absolutely
love and
right. You're unthinking the war by making love instead.
But every once in a while, we do want to face the reality and just wake up and smell the war.
The blood.
Right.
The blood. Because it's being perpetrated in our name. This is our generation.
And
this is our country.
And the blood is on our hands.
This is not just something that Bush is doing. This is something...
It's the ruling class.
Well, it's the ruling class and the working class who goes off and fights. They're doing it. You know, we support the troops and all that, but they are going and fighting the war. Now, what if they refused?
And, yeah.
Well?
That's right.
So this is being perpetrated by different classes in the United States, also by the middle class who just watches it on television and doesn't, you know, register much about
it. No, and they think it's a television show.
Yeah, and that's why the media supports the war. The media supports the war because people
And it makes money
it.
For them.
And why does it make money for them? Because we watch it. If we didn't watch it, and there you're right, if we didn't watch these all the war reports, then it wouldn't make any money. then they wouldn't be so supportive of the war.
Right.
They only support the war because we watch it. I mean, I was saying earlier, Rupert Murdoch, you know, he of course puts the tits on page two in England, but not here in the United States. And he knows that sex sells, but war sells too. The only thing is, war actually kills people, and sex, you know, sex kills maybe a few people, but it heals a billion times more than it kills.
Absolutely. But war is a hugely expensive problem and mistake.
yes, that's another thing that pisses me off is, okay, it's one thing to be fighting your war games, but it's another thing to be taking all the money from every other possible project in this land. And
you see how important they have made their project.
Well, but you see, if we didn't make it important, they'd steal the money anyway. So I don't know that we have that much. We only have power, I think, in terms of the media.
You have power philosophically. And here's what you do. It's like you're Andy Kaufman in the ring with a sumo. And how are you going to beat this sumo?
Because we are the 100th monkey.
You
want to hear how Andy Kaufman beats the sumo.
Fate and parry. Well, he runs away. It was funny because he was running away, you know. All around the ring, but
this actually happened.
Yeah. But the Asian martial arts philosophy is to exploit the
weakness,
exploit the strength. Actually, exploit their
opponent,
strength,
right?
their power.
Our
you use their power
huge.
Against them.
If it gets going, if it gets enough momentum, you can cause it to fall down and destroy itself.
Well,
and that's how you do it.
And if 10% of us, 20% of us withdraw from the system has no profit.
Right.
Well, I believe in that. And like we were talking about before, trying not to buy into the system.
Well, actually, Willem, my dear friend, that's his philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you fall into their system and fight their system, you're defeated because you're in their system.
Right.
So what are you, are you in the system? I mean, what's your name again? I'm sorry.
Stuart.
Stuart, right, Stuart. What do you do out there in North Carolina?
I'm working at the university.
Working at the university?
Yes, I'm a research programmer. I do computer visualization. I'm a computer graphics guy.
Oh, cool.
And really, the coolest thing that I've done is sculpture, is computer-generated, mixed-media, four-dimensional sculpture, kinetic sculpture.
Ah, kinetic sculpture. That sounds like our neighbors do
You're our friend, right, on MySpace?
How do we know you?
How do we know you?
I've been doing email.
With Dr. Susie.
My brain ranges far and wide, and one of the things, there's an author who writes popular nonfiction books about science, and at a conference, we were sitting down having lunch, and this was totally a candid comment that I probably shouldn't repeat, but he said, someday I want to write a book about a society where all they care about is sex and mathematics.
Oh, interesting.
And really, that's a brilliant insight because not only did the Hindus in the 5th to 8th century invent Tantra, they also invented mathematics.
You know, I had a boyfriend just like that in college. He only cared about sex and mathematics.
Right.
He was hot. But I got a little bored. I think I wanted more.
Right.
You know, but I think it is kind of an idyllic sort of construct, just sex and mathematics.
Mm-hmm. Right. It takes you way out there mentally and intellectually. It's totally the abstract and
So which of the networks have we met you through?
Oh gosh, well, I don't know. I think I just have been pestering
you just wandered
you
into
my
site. Okay. I gotcha. So you wandered in and you're there in North Carolina and you're are you married or single?
I'm married.
Good. Is it good? Everything okay?
It's strange.
Strange.
The past few years have been very strange because I still own a house in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Oh.
And so I'm actually commuting to, I live in Asheville 3 or 4 nights a week and commute back to Oak Ridge on the weekend. So it's really interesting. It's never boring, but it just makes home life a bit stressful sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's not as bad as if you were in Iraq.
That's right. It could be worse. Yep.
So.
You're right.
All right, Stuart. Well,
I'd like to talk to you on next Monday about four-dimensional sculpture, if you don't mind.
You can talk to us now because you took up a lot of air time, and you might as well finish it off because we extended the program from an hour and a half to 2 hours. So tell us about that a little bit.
Okay. It really starts back in the 1920s with Marcel Duchamp and Man Ray and the Cubists.
Uh-huh.
The dawn of cinema, you know, happened in the 1870s, and Edward Muybridge did all these studies of human locomotion, which you might remember.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the pictures one after the other of people walking or doing
right.
something.
Right. So in the 1920s, Marcel Duchamp and Man Ray and their group were making experimental films, which were fairly bizarre. But at that time, the Armory Show of 1913 had Duchamp's Nude Descending a Staircase, which was directly after Muybridge, and that fed into the Cubists, which were all about the fourth dimension. And I think that people's idea about the cinema was four-dimensional, it was about the four dimension, where a film is a four-dimensional entity. It's space and time encapsulated in this object. And so, fast forward, 70 years now, and we have computers computer compilers of natural mathematical language so that we can make mathematics physical.
Well, are you going to send me one of your sculptures?
I guess I could.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
I made a series of 8 of a piece I call Botticelli. And,
okay.
Oh, Botticelli.
Botticelli.
Yeah. Botticelli.
Has a crazy
history. Botticelli.
It goes back to 1987. Some mathematicians at the University of Illinois came up with this parameterization of a Klein bottle, which was in the form of 2 Roman surfaces that are really crazy tangled objects put together, except it has this appearance of kind of your pubic area. It's kind of this picture of the front of a woman's pelvis,
wow.
Who's a little bit pudgy. And Donna Cox, one of the researchers at Illinois, said, "My God, this is a Venus."
Mm.
And she published pictures of what they called it the Etruscan Venus, and she published a picture, a computer-generated picture of the Etruscan Venus next to the Venus of Willendorf, which is this 16,000-year-old...
Right. The oldest piece of sculpture.
...fertility idol, right? And she called it Paleolithic postmodern.
Actually, I call the Venus of Willendorf the oldest sex toy.
Could be.
Listen,
Stuart, we have to end the program. But,
okay.
But we'd like to talk to you again.
Okay.
And that's very interesting stuff. And I appreciate, we do appreciate your point of view, meaning that drop out and don't give them the profit.
Well, I think you have to chase them around, or make them chase you until they fall on their own sword.
Yeah, well, and eventually they will.
Yeah.
And eventually they will, and we have to bring democracy to this country before we export it to other countries. Because we haven't learned what democracy is yet.
Exactly.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk again.
We'll talk again. Please call us. We're on every night.
Sure,
what time is it there in Asheville?
It's 3 hours later. It's 3 hours later.
24 a.m. on Tuesday morning.
Right. Well, hello, Asheville. We were there many, many years ago, and we love you. And call us back, okay?
Okay. Take care.
You take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. And we are going to wind up tonight's program. It's the fourth anniversary of the disaster.
We have 7 minutes.
Mesopotamia. We have seven. Okay, so we do have to do the next 7 minutes?
Yes, we do.
Well, why don't you do a little station ID while I take a pee? Because
okay.
I got to. That's why I had to get off. Stuart started to sound like, I just have to say this. I love Stuart, you know, and North Carolina and all that, and the Etruscan Venus.
Well, that's highfalutin stuff.
He started sounding to me like my boyfriend from Yale who was into the math and sex. And
I'm into math and sex, too.
No, well,
2 + 2 = 4, and penis and vagina is 1.
My head started swimming. I got to pee now.
From Los Angeles, California, you've been listening.
By the time I get back, we're going to...
No, you can go take a pee.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, go take a pee. Right. Bring me a glass. I'm thirsty. From Los Angeles, California, you've been listening... What? From Los Angeles, California, you've been listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. And tonight, we are not celebrating the anniversary of this horrific war. We've talked to a lot of people. We've talked to the underground, the underbelly of American thought and American citizens. And if you're listening in the Arab countries, we want you to know that not all Americans are George Bushes. We want you to know that not all Americans are warmongers. We want you to know that many of us Americans are peaceful and peace-loving people. And we use all of our energy that we have, our little radio stations, our little blogs, our little magazines, to further the cause of peace amongst ourselves as individuals, but also as nations. And as Dr. Block pointed out earlier, there are challengers. There are nations that are growing up. And there are nations, perhaps, that want to show us that peace is really possible. And from Los Angeles, California, from our house to your house, we thank you for having us.
I'm back. I feel much better. Oh. Boy, that was an intense show, and I held in a whole lot of pee-pee. I feel so good to release it. Mm. But it was very interesting to hear all these different points of view about this fourth anniversary of the Iraq War. You know, how do we deal with it? We're all obviously peaceniks to some degree.
Right,
that spoke
they weren't
tonight.
Different.
Well, they were all peaceniks, but they all have different ways of dealing with the disaster that we're in. Whether it's protesting, actively running for president, doing art collages, or ignoring it. You know, just saying I am not going to have that war as part of my life. I guess that was Stuart's kind of philosophy.
Yeah, that's the Ritter's philosophy too. Ignore it.
Ignore it, right. Well,
go on with your art.
I don't know if that... I mean, but part of my art is paying attention to what's happening in the world.
Of course.
I like to engage in the world.
We got a bigger radio station.
So, you know, I guess I don't really go by Stuart's
philosophy. I also, or Willems, if that's Willems' philosophy, I also feel that, you know, when you're silent, then they get away with even more shit. So.
Well, not that Willem is silent, believe me.
No, he's not. You know, that's the thing, is Willem says one thing and then does another a lot.
Oh,
and says both sides of the same.
We ought to call him one night.
We will. We will. We're going to call him. We're now cruising across the airwaves. We had the most action tonight, really, that we've had on a show, and it was a special occasion. It's the fourth anniversary of the disaster in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
And what can we do about it? Well, I don't know if we came up with any solid solutions.
Well, no, actually we did.
A few ideas.
Each one of us individually...
each one of us individually can protest, can... run
drop
for
out,
president.
Drop out.
Can drop out.
Run for president.
But I guess that what we have to do, or have an orgasm for peace, you know, that's another to do it.
Don't give them the ammunition, and most of all...
Don't participate.
Right. Most of all, don't give them your kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's participating. That's beyond participating. That is giving up
sacrifice.
Your loved ones as cannon fodder. Yeah, not only cannon fodder, but also turning them into murderers, because this is not a war of self-defense. This is a war of murder.
We're at 12:29. We've got 1 minute left.
Okay, so have a global orgasm for peace tonight. It just means focus on peace as you have your orgasm. Follow the bonobo way. Make love, not war. Follow all different types of fantasies and fetishes. And enjoy your brief time in this beautiful paradise. Make love to someone you love tonight. Even if that someone is you, I love you.
You've been listening to Radio Susie One on the World Wide Web. And you've been listening to Revolution and Evolution. The answer is within ourselves. And like a dreaded disease, we should pass it on to others. From our house to your house, thank you for having us. We love you.